Time. I have a new titanium knee, and this is like the first time standing. Oh, the people! Yeah. Okay. So you're at Roulette now, and this is one of the last events of being here in this space, and we're going to be moving to a fantastic new space. It's really incredible. And if you haven't seen photos of it, please look out front. There's a little folder. Oh, there are things on everybody's seat, I see. And I think it's going to be kind of amazing. We might not have the same kind of technical difficulties that we have tonight. I thank Waramon. Isn't that an amazing name? Waramon. I like it. Anyway, I got a NYFA fellowship, and one of the requirements is that we make a free presentation of work, and so I decided to mostly show work that's not been seen before in the United States or work in progress, and I want to also read something that, if you've read John Zorn's Arcana publication, you might have seen, but I think it's different reading it anyway. And I'll talk more about Roulette, too, afterwards. Okay. Shall I stand? Wow. Okay. Thank you for being inside in this incredibly beautiful evening. Okay. All the nerve endings are alive as the music plays. Everything is heightened. The carpet seems plusher, the beige of it so beige. The light coming in through the window is brighter. The smell wafting in from the kitchen into the living room is more intense. Mmm, Crisco oil. The grain of the fabric covering the speakers on the hi-fi stereo in the corner of the room is so textured. As Mantovani's strings fill the room, everything is seen, felt, heard in almost hallucinogenic detail. The body absorbs the music. The body is buoyed by the music in the enchanted room where the music plays. Remnants of the flute detail follow Frank Sinatra phrase, seep inside of you, you are inside of the embellishment. It gives new life. It gives new life. And... Okay. It gives new life as it lives and breathes through you. You walk out of the enchanted room where the music has left its mark, made its magic. It still permeates the walls, and you bring that little flute part with you into the hallway where it's suddenly swathed in rich reverberation as you give voice to it, sing it in the hallway, repeat it over and over. The echoes of your echo transformed, transfigured figure. You listen as it fills the hallway, somehow removed from the source, disconnected from the stereo, outside your body, and no one knows where the sound is coming from. It's your secret. They are all inside their apartments with their own music playing, and you can hear a mother on the third floor yelling for her children to come to the kitchen for dinner. You hear a woman typing, and oh, how comforting a sound that is. She's sitting at the formica table, and she plays the typewriter. Aperiodic rhythms, varied tempi, and pregnant pauses that surround that crunchy timbre bring her words to the page, her thoughts to life. It is music to your ears. And can you believe it? Lex Baxter's orchestra is suddenly pumped up in volume. At least you hear it that way. And there's a woman who growls like a lion and trills like a bird. It's Ema Sumac! You didn't know it then, but she had a number one hit on the charts. And you heard her before you and your family moved away from the apartment house, that resonating instrument filled with sound. And you choreographed processions, got the other kids to sing while the parents stood in the stairwells on the landings until each kid ended up in the concrete courtyard, another acoustic container. More melodies. You learned a little Japanese song, and Sweet Betsy from Pike, and you brought them into the courtyard, and the neighbors looked out of their windows, watching, listening. Put it all together. organize sounds and songs and pictures into a strand of musical postmodernism, pre-postmodernism, yes, string it all together into something that must be music. It must be, because there's timbre, there's time, there's melody, tonality and rhythm, and there's harmony. There are layers and silences and connections and cadences and even applause at the end. And can you sing like Frankie and Nat King Cole? Can you capture their phrasing? Can you sing like Ima? You hear the dogs of different sizes bark, yelping and growling. Ooh, can you do that? Get it into your body. Yeah, inhabit, cohabitate. How much sound do we let in? How much of it stays? How much do we use in our future music making? The music that enlivened the enchanted living room, the living, breathing hallways, the courtyard, seemed to die when you and your family left that apartment house. You were 11 years old. You don't have to say you love me, and the wind cries, Mary, sitting down by my window. You sing them as though they will get you a ticket to a new land of emotion, of experience, that you couldn't travel to without going so deeply inside of them. Or are the voices you are trying to ride more like a costume? And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind. Wish you could scream like Janis, but you can't do that, not then. Go elsewhere, bongos and congas in the projects, transistor radios, protest marches, crowds and small cafes, and now the words ring through you. The expression of loss eclipses the actual music for a while, but memory has etched it on you, the cellular level adding to this giant music box of you. Spin, turn, listening for openings, new sounds seep in. Walking down the street, you're drawn into sounding events, pulled into music. You're 17, a high school dropout living on the Lower East Side. Your boyfriend works at a bookstore on St. Mark's Place, Princeton grad, erudite, art critic. He played classical guitar for you. Ravel's Pavane for a Dead Princess and Grateful Dead too. All of my friends. Love makes everything alive and musical. Oh, the rain is playing, drizzling, slap, flish. You can make that sound with your tongue. Your very agile tongue can go side to side very quickly. Saliva between your teeth and lips flutter, a whole symphony in your mouth, accompanying the rain, accompanying you. You walk home singing to the drones of garbage trucks, switch the rhythm of your feet. Ooh, change now, count five, now seven, switch when you hear that siren. Keep up the pace, in time, people passing, scattered languages, smatterings, accents, gestures. Again, ever more details. So many ideas move through you, so absorbed, this can be dangerous. You're walking, you're walking, you're walking. You're walking, you're walking, you're walking, you're walking. Your head's bobbing and it suddenly turns on your way home from work. Look over there. Listen, music's coming out of the port of call east on First Avenue. You stop at the window. Danny Mixon is playing piano and Buster is playing the big bass and Reggie's on drums and you stand at the window and sing along. They invite you in and somehow they let you sing with them. But after a short time, you remember this is real life and they are real musicians. Who the hell are you to chime in? Why were you able to do that? Because it was connected to your walk downtown and you were connected to the momentum. And because music is a magic carpet for you and you are safe when you are listening, you are safe when you are inside the music. But oh, when you know there is responsibility there, you can't just fly. It's not that easy, is it? Reggie comes over to your apartment. He says what you're doing is some kind of Balinese jazz. You were dancing then. Oh yes, oh Asia, oh jazz. You so loved everything Japanese, but you didn't know Bali, not then, and why jazz? Everyone talked about it being so intellectual. You didn't analyze the chord changes. You just heard something open and change and modulate, and you loved it shifting in those dark, intimate spaces, atmosphere. They asked me how I knew. My true love was true. Slinky, sensual. The family neighbors back when you were a child were saying, get that girl an instrument. She has talent.
But it's all right, Ma. I'm only...
You had your voice. Your body was ripe for playing. Black or Asian. Black or Asian. You've got it already at 18. You want to be a kabuki dancer. They do it all. Music, dance, image, storytelling. Get yourself out there to San Francisco. But you didn't know that all those exquisitely costumed women were played by men. Reading Artaud, doing Grotowski exercises. Okay, get thee to sound collecting in forts under the Golden Gate Bridge. Oh my God, the hallways where you grew up never sounded this gorgeous. You start chanting, and the other actors in the experimental theater group you wound up in are chanting with you. You're leading the other actors in the chant. How can it be? You're so young, so skinny, so uneducated. Shit, it's as cool as the davening in the synagogue in your old neighborhood. You're rocking, all of you. Hey now, remember to remember the birds squawking overhead, punctuating time, lighthouse, so deep, so sonorous, like the tuba you wanted to play when you were young, but they said it was too heavy for a skinny little girl like you. Roaring traffic. Passing over the bridge, so many drones, ooh, so many tones. Hold it, hold it, hold it. Bring it back to the rehearsal space. Recollect, yup, the body's the biggest recorder possible in the storage house of memory. Your instrument, shake it. Vibrate the chest cavity with your voices. Feel those diamonds on your nipples. That's what the director said. Move it up through your cheeks and then draw the landscapes with your voice. Big picture, tiny detail, magnified. Tear it up, tear it apart, collage. Layers, time, motion, chords, harmonies, acoustic phenomena. Later, years later, you spin the dials on the multi-effects unit, sing into that microphone and place yourself in a new acoustic location every time you change the setting. The reverb, the effect triggers a psychological location, an emotional landscape, conjures physical place, a thought world, effects affecting how fast or how slowly you think, suggesting languages, inventing new ones, envelopes enveloping. Fuck, you don't always leave enough space. It just gushes out sometime when there's not that reverb coating it. You rush to fill in. You imitate too much. You listen too hard. You weave, but be rigorous in thought. Yes, rigorous after the fact. Yes, rigorous, rigorous in intensity, in energy. Utter, open sense, swallow, flutter in my fingertips. No fucking discipline, just hard work of some kind. Track the sound of your own soundtrack. Squeeze out of me those sounds that turn to words. Flash, hear sound, press, draw memory, pump, bend mind and heart, spin, weave, fabric. Distraction lures you to an imagined language to make sense of the nonsense, the remnants. There's a place for almost everything in the shifting quilt. How to capture, compose, where to cut it off. You were with a man at a concert of improvised music, and the musicians had never played together before, but he said, they must have played together before. How else would they know when to end? That's for you, Robert. Thank you. Hey, I don't know exactly where I'm gonna go. I'm trying to find the next piece to tell Warmon to play. I haven't organized it today, but something will come on. Okay, so a lot of my work has to do with remembering childhood and the giant impact of living in that building with all of those incredible apartments with the doors open and sounds running around. And my father was a big inspiration to me. And I made a piece for him called My Father Piece. And I did it at the kitchen, among other places. And I'm just going to play a short... not. I might have to speak along with him while he's speaking because he's talking about being very muscular and all that and lifting bathtubs that weighed 500 pounds. But now that you know that, you might hear that. Okay. Thank you, Warman. In the living room.
I was never afraid because my dad is the tallest dad, and my dad is the strongest dad.
Sure, he's muscular, small, picked up 500 pounds.
And he's Frank and he's Johnny and he's Mario, though he only knows the first five or six words from every song, and he sings along. There was a boy, and I listen and hum the little flute parts in my head. And we're over all the other apartments, we're at the top. We don't need any trees, we got the sky and all the time. We can see the people across the way. It's light all the time in the living room. And whenever we open up the door, we hear the sounds from everyone else's apartment rushing into our white living room. Light, beige carpet in the living room, dancing, twirling, spinning, reeling on the smart little admirer of her dad, dancing in the beautiful enchanted living room. A Berlin Zimmer with a window looking out onto the courtyard.
There were normal rooms of an apartment house. I don't know how you can, you know, elaborate thinking they're beautiful. I don't think it was beautiful. I don't remember what the rooms looked like. They could have been pink for all I know. I don't think the apartment house was the experience other than getting together with the guys and jamming. You know, and me banging on a table because I didn't have to play an instrument. I mean, I enjoyed the music. Relaxing, soft. After a hard day's work, come back, have a glass of milk and cookies, and listen to music. There are times I'd have tears in my eyes, even today.
So I've really been, in terms of performing, aside from all the just totally free improvised stuff, I've been making a lot of portrait pieces and autobiographical works. I gotta figure out where to go next. I gotta figure out where to go next. I gotta figure out what to do next. Okay. Yes.
You know what I like to do sometimes even better? Hi, what's your name? No. You know, I get to be very loose here. You didn't pay anything to come in. All right. But one thing I really love doing is giving workshops. You're nice. And I think it's because I remember, and Jay, I think you remember this, I was singing with Kirk Nurok, and I remember the first time he said that I had to use a microphone, and I said, no, this is too disembodied. And then Jay came into the group, and Jay really knew how to use a microphone and sing in the group. Remember that, Jay? With
no,
John?
It was too long ago.
Okay, very long ago. And I just didn't know, it felt like, where's, now it's become a safety net for me in a way.
Actually do something in here that you might not ordinarily do. And it do not sound like you. It feels somehow disembodied.
But when I'm doing workshops, what I like about not using the mic, I go,
Rosima, eggs on a plate.
And then everybody does it back.
Phrase!
Roxy in a garden and I'm on a stone wall hitting downtown.
Right. But there's something really different about either exploring acoustic spaces and then exploring the body without
this thing here, but it is, as I said, a safety net. So now I'm gonna play something that has nothing to do with safety nets. In fact, I met this person in Japan. No, I met him in Switzerland at the Toklos Festival, and he invited me to come to Japan and play with him. And we'd never played together at all. And he invited me to this festival. And first I sung my pieces at the festival and did a trio with him. And then we had a gig at this place called the Big Apple. Now, the festival was packed, but this little club, 2 days later, charging a lot of money, was a small place with a very low ceiling, even though it was called the Big Apple. The guy that owned it was about 6 feet tall, so he practically touched the ceiling. And there were four visitors there. And there was me and Kazu Uchihashi playing together, literally the first time that we ever played, you know, together. And I'm going to just play a little. I've had this fascination with Japan and Japanese things and wanting to be a kabuki dancer and all that. So we went to several cities, and it was great exploring the rock gardens, but there was something that started. Well, anyway, you'll hear it in the piece. This one is called Duets. It's just a little excerpt from an improvisation. And it, yeah.
The monks rigged the rocks, and there were stones put together in the rock garden by the temple. But what I loved were the trees hanging over. Red maple, the smell of cedar went right through my bones. I could not believe what I smelled. I could not bear to see the streets filled with all those people. Though I loved the little packages in the store, we walked up to the hill. There were thousands and thousands of people. We walked up to the temple, and the temple was like an extension of the amusement park. I had never been there before. It had once been a spiritual place, now an extension of all that consumerism. I couldn't believe it, but from the distance, one light lit by electricity shone upon some kind of beautiful pagoda-like temple that looked like some outer space object set inside those trees that I'd been looking at from close. Now they were far away, and I thought all those people praying, they believed what they were doing, and I believed I was in a certain place that I had thought would enlighten me, but there was no such thing, there was no such thing, there was no such thing. Possibilities, so many possibilities, and sometimes you go so many places. It's so nice, the simple things. Come back.
paper. I don't remember the rest of the conversation.
Stop, okay.
Well, that's the way it goes. All right, so.
We did a performance here. Jim, I didn't tell you this, but it's going to be part of our new CD was an improvisation we did here at Roulette. And I've been very deeply involved in with Roulette for many, many, many years. Like, wow, 1983, I think, was the first time. And then I met my amazing partner, David Weinstein, who I collaborated with, and it was extraordinary. And I saw, for me, the greatest performer, the most mesmerizing performer that I'd ever seen at Roulette when it was still at the small space. And I'm going to play some video in that, but first I'm going to say something about it. His name is Jerry Hunt. And I had, when I saw him the first time, he was walking around the room with these sticks. He had a big comb over. He had a white lab coat on. He looked like some kind of a meat inspector shaman. And I spent 3 years researching things about Jerry. I actually went and filmed his lover in Texas and took lots of film of the house where they'd lived in together. They were together for 28 years. He was just one of the most incredible people. And one day, and you'll kind of hear it in this video that's going to come up, but, oh, and I was very jealous because we were all at this festival, and he shared the bill with Karen Finley for a number of days, and then they had already bonded by the time I got in there. Now, Jerry was my hero. And they were going to do things together. But anyway, it turned out Jerry and I did get close. And after he passed away, I was in Berlin and listening to his music. And suddenly, I just, for me, music is a lot about immersion. How do you immerse yourself very deeply and very authentically in something? And Jerry was a master of that. But this music, made me start kind of moving around the room. And so I called from Berlin, his lover, his partner, Stephen, in Texas, and said, and my boyfriend was saying, no, you can't use that. Actually, I actually say it in the piece. And Stephen said, listen, you were listed in Jerry's will as one of the people that could use his music. So I was really incredibly blessed. The thing is, I don't think he imagined I would do what I actually did with it. I had the good, well, I did a small performance in Roulette, and then I did something at the Whitney on 42nd Street with many monitors, and then I had the good fortune to be produced in Berlin and in Munich in really big theaters. Peter Greenaway had a piece, 100 of my favorite things. I got to use 33 of these monitors, and I made a huge installation. I decided that I wanted the audience to sit on the stage inside of the installation, and so the seats in the audience were empty, but there were monitors, and you walked through the installation to get to your seats to see the piece, and there were tons of Jerry's house was insane. He had plywood on all the walls, and he had taken fire to get all of the designs from the wood out. And then he would have like 50 striped ties hanging somewhere. He had a self-built toilet. It was just an incredible place with tons of... Now, while he actually, in his performances, everything was much more minimal, but I took advantage. I'm a kind of messy person. I don't like to have a lot of junk around. So I had this opportunity to work in this theater, and I just did these virtual duets with Jerry. I had trees laid on their side with a monitor in them where he would appear, and I would have a basket with a little projection screen where objects were flying through. And then I had a very large black scrim, which he came up in. And then there were these 33 monitors which were hung on white cables, and they kind of looked like blossoms in a way. Well, they changed throughout the performance. You're going to see a little bit of that in there, but you need the explanation because I spent so much time making the visuals, and it was an hour and a half long piece, very intense. And what I did was collage Jerry's music. So I start out in the piece with a big skirt with lots of leeks on it and little toothbrushes and things. And at one point I turn and I'm behind a curtain of leeks. And the first section of this, I'm being shot from behind the curtain. So I'm using a film of Jerry that he did with another person, and I blanked out the other person, and I'm projected live having a conversation with him. So that'll be the first piece. And then later you'll see a piece where after I do this kind of sweet song that Jerry actually imagined having singers sing to, not like how I kind of collaged it all in my own way. And in that piece, I go up on the swing, literally 30 feet into the air, and do this duet with him. So anyway, so this starts with Talk Slice, and I, you know, like I said, I worked for years just collecting all the stuff with Jerry. I wound up doing it in the basement also of a museum in Germany and a couple of big theaters in Germany as well. But I saw Jerry Hunt the first time at Roulette. So you know what that means. Keep supporting Roulette, and there's going to be amazing things coming with the new space. I can't wait. Okay, so Waramon. So these Jerry Hunt pieces starting at Talk Slice. It's really bad quality, but you'd never get to see it any other way, so you don't enjoy it.
You know, you have this this way of trying to generate a sense of frustration. And then everything from that sense of frustration is just a modulation of it. And then you just call that structure. I mean, you have a certain way, you set up a situation in which frustration can exist, and then you pretend that what you produced...
Well, I don't know. Sometimes out of frustration, the most creative things happen. If you let it go, it's
chaos.
Have to make
some kind of connective... it's like the lower lip. I mean, it has to pop on that, you know? That there has to be some, interrelationship.
I did not get that.
Made. I mean, otherwise the duality of
dualities. Well, archetypes are interesting thing. I've actually read a lot about archetypes and, you know.
And the most interesting text cited to me, you know, on this very subject, because I see you take that text in the sense of the most generalized sense. But these were historical texts as well. They were texts that consisted of symbols and signs that apparently no one has ever satisfactorily deciphered. And it's odd because of all of the John Dee charts, you know, that people thought I would know something about it. And it's strange that there is
Well, they did think that because you've been known to have like been interested in an angelic inversion.
There was a time when I had a lot of need for things like that, when I felt like there was a constant need for more symbols, more signs, because I had to come up with ever finer gradations. A subtle distinctions between one thing.
Right. Well, in the details, that's the most interesting.
It's a major problem still in the articulation of non-vocal music.
What about vocal music?
She was the greatest comedian since Richard Pryor, and he decided to collaborate with was so uncharacteristically shy around him.
So Jerry's up there on this black scrim, and I'm up there on the swing with wings. And those little white spots you see are his face in some of the 33 monitors that are hanging at different lengths in the room.
Was very fond of those pretty little birds that sang at sunrise.
That's his lover, Stephen.
Can't help but evoke, I think, those feelings about your own end. And if it's someone that you've loved and loved physically the way I did, it was really quite a joke for me to see him do that. You know, this is the body that I grew up loving, you know, I mean, from junior high school. I watched that body mature and I watched that body get old and ill.
Directly to the relationship of the
This is part of the set, but I, you know, I got to go wild with all of these amazing things in the opera prop shops and things, and it was just one of the most amazing experiences to be able to build something to your hero. So, but okay, let's turn the lights on, please. I know it's hard to hear all the words. It's just, you know, you wind up doing these things in places and where almost nobody that you know in New York ever gets to see them. So I just am happy for the opportunity, and I'm very grateful to have had the NYFA grant, and so I get to do this presentation and just show various things. So now I'm gonna, how much time has passed? What? Okay, I'm gonna now play a piece. Here's some works in progress. It's an old story, and I have this incredible collaborator named Simon Ho, and it seems like the project gets prolonged. We love working together. He lives in Europe, so we try to get together whenever we can, and now we're at the final point of putting out a CD on Zadok. And many of the pieces I wound up using, taking music that he had made from one source and putting my vocals. And if Nicholas Van Echten is here, I say thank you for all your work with me in the studio. My vocals to pieces that Simo had made and my words. But this particular piece, Simo and I composed together, and then he arranged it for the strings, and I added my voices to it. And hopefully, maybe even at Roulette, I am hoping to have a chorus, because I have so many backup voices, I really want to do it with a whole string section and like at least five voices or something like that. That would be great. So this piece is called Maxime. After I left California, I was 20. I was going on 20, and I moved thinking that I was going to join another theater group in Amsterdam, but it didn't happen that way. But anyway, here's a piece called Maxime Cardon that Simon Ho and I. Hi, Simo, wherever you are.
I'm thinking about Maxime Cardon. She was French from Paris, but I met her in Amsterdam. We were both models at the Academy of Art. She was new the first time I saw her. She had a face like a Madonna. Her eyebrows were plucked. She had brown bedroom eyes and silky maroon and had hair with short bangs. Her front teeth were large, but she mostly kept her full lips closed. She was tall, her neck was thin, her shoulders were delicate, and her long arms moved so gracefully. Her breasts hung low, but the nipples pointed upward. She was short-waisted with wide hips. Her slender legs seemed to start way high up. Somehow she reminded me of un os. Yes, in French, the word for horse is cheval. Much more romantic than horse. I was 20, she was 23, and she used to ride me on the back of her bike. We'd stop at the outdoor markets at closing time, and we'd pick fruits and vegetables from the reject pile. And she said, on my good day, I'd even find steak on the street. And we found an abandoned factory to squat. It was filled with mildewed furniture and used syringes and other unmentionable things. And it took us a long time to clear it out, but somehow the movement we made as we cleared it up was like some kind of new choreography. The place was magnifique in the end. There were skylights, and we set up our bedrooms in two alcoves. clothes, and we took our meals on a platform covered with a burgundy rug. We sat in big stuffed armchairs as though we were in a Vermeer painting. And we found everything on the street, even the gas lamp. We had no electricity. But we made it in the most simple meal, beautiful. Deviled eggs, raw haring, and fresh figs. And sometimes our parents sent us fine champagne. A makeshift dining platform was set over a trap door to prevent our downstairs neighbors from climbing into our place again. 10 guys with long, scraggly black hair lived down there. They were from Italy. It was very dark, and they liked to sew while snorting white stuff in the glow. One day, Maxime and I saw two of them panhandling on the Dom Square. They were wearing bell bottoms that they made from our missing brocade bedspreads, pom poms and all. They were quite domestic. They sang O Solo Mio while they cooked pasta in big garbage cans in front of the house. I'm not kidding.
These are works in progress. I'm going to, since it is getting a little late, I'm going to play another piece. And this piece, something that I really love to do is, it's happened several times with Simo and I. He's played a piece of music for me, and I said, wait a second, I wrote a text. Don't even play more than the first 10 seconds. Those chords are already in my head from my text. And then we recorded it, and it just became a piece. And then for this piece that I'm going to play, which is rather sad, I mean, not rather sad, it's we had a piece that we didn't use, and he was saying, you know, I really love this piece, and I was looking for music for this story, and he had written something, it didn't exactly work, and then we heard this music, and I said, that's it. This is the sound that has to go with this story. And then in the studio, I tell the story and I added some other vocal parts. It still has to be mixed and it has to be faded out sooner than it does. Can you play Jim Gartenberg and maybe close the light or dim the light for this, please?
Dennis had moved into my place 2 days before. He left for work that Monday morning, but he came back up minutes later and told me to turn on the TV, that something unbelievable had happened. I wanted to go downstairs and see for myself. When I saw the building in flames, I told Dennis that it must just be a horrible accident and that he was being so negative to think it had been planned. But then, while we were standing there on the street, the second plane hit and the second tower burst into flames. We stood and watched. People were jumping from the towers and people covered with debris ran past us. I was distraught. Dennis insisted on taking me back upstairs. When we got inside, he turned on the TV. People were calling in to Channel 7 News with eyewitness accounts. I brushed off their claims, thinking how much closer to it all we were. And then Jim Gartenberg called in. World Trade Center 1. It's not was there, he said. I am here now, stuck on the 86th floor with one other person, the area facing the East River. When asked, he said he had no idea exactly where the plane hit. In a voice that remained calm, he said, if I'm on the air, I want to tell anybody that may have a family member in the building that the situation seems to be under control and that the danger is not increased. So please, all family members, take it easy.
He could still be heard talking in the background when the newscasters went on to report that all the bridges and tunnels into and out of the city were closed. This CD actually has a number of very sorrowful things on it. But now I'm going to just close and play something that I'm working on with my friend, the video artist, film artist, installation artist, Ursula Scherer. And we're trying to figure out how we can come together in some ways. We have so much in common in terms of how we think about the body and nature and sensuality, but our tempos are very different. So she had an installation I'm sorry, I get very emotional after that last piece. She had a piece at the lab. It was funded by the Swiss Institute in San Francisco, and Flo Kaufman did the sound. And then they invited me to do a performance, and I'm doing electronics and singing. We're trying to find a way now to do it and to either do it as an installation or to have a performance where there's clearly better lighting and it's going to have a number of different episodes. And what else did I want to say about that? There's something I really... Here I go about roulette again. I was at a performance here, Phil Niblock Music, and Catherine Liberskaya was playing her video. And I started writing in the dark. And I... To the images and the music. And I couldn't really see what I was doing. But afterwards, I decided to give it to Phil for his birthday, to read it for him. And they asked me to perform with them, he and Catherine, on the next gig. So I tried seeing what it was like to actually write and speak at the same time, how it would change, how slow or fast, or just really the rhythm of the body changing things. And we are hoping somehow to incorporate this into the piece. Ursula had the idea to write on wax, or at least other surfaces, so these words will appear in different rates and be projected, whether we wind up doing it live or whether we wind up just, you know, having it as an installation. But it is a work in progress, and I think her images are incredible. So this might be, yeah. So you can play these things from amidst. Thank you, Warrenon.
The room. Surround. Yeah.
too late. Behind. Candle? No, no, not candle. Not wires. Nine. Birthdays? Hers? Remember? Blow. Hers.
And just keep playing. And this one is a choral piece that I composed that I put to this image afterwards.
They are not like pickup sticks or anything like that. They are an enlargement of, you know, some kind of grass. It's kind of representational here. I tried. Perhaps unsuccessfully to squeeze a memory out of the body. You know, like the toothpaste you use sometimes. You know, you think of this recorder, this storage house here. I tried thinking if I got myself in a certain kind of place, I could squeeze the memory out of the body into the words that were meant to be there and somehow elicited the same kind of response. She loved the bathtub.
I
Ursula, where are you? Oh, Ursula, oh, Ursula, I want you to take it. All right, we can't see her. She's very shy anyway. Where are you there? Oh, hi. I can't see you past that light. She saved the day today, too, because nothing was working on my computer. Thank you, and Warren on. And Simon Ho.
I love my friend.
And Nico, if you're anywhere around, thank you.